We'd like to welcome Maha Nassar and Ala Alazay. They're both educators and activists in their local communities, and we're very honored to have you here from Palestine. Welcome.
Thank you.
Can you introduce yourselves, tell us where you're from, and a little bit about the work that you do?
Okay, I'm Maha Nassar. I'm the chairperson of the Union of Palestinian Women Committees. It is a grassroots-based organization of women and women rights. We have branches all over the cities of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and we are affiliated with raising conscience of women and programs for young women, kindergartens, and income generating projects. That's what I am.
Ala Al-Azza, and a social activist within the Palestinian community, especially the refugee community, and I'm involved in establishing committee of a Handala Cultural Center, which is based in Beit Jibrin refugee camp in Bethlehem, and we offer like space for the children to have better chance in terms of like education and social life. So I was an activist within the student movement when I was in school.
Okay, thanks. Before we begin talking a little bit about more of the work that you do and the issue of refugees and how the daily lives of Palestinians are affected under occupation, can you give us a little background and history about the creation of the Israeli state and Zionism? Either of you.
Okay. At the beginning, the question of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, it's never been based on religious background. It's a political question for the Palestinians, and the conflict started with between the Zionist movement as a political ideology and the Palestinian people, the native people of the land. While the Zionist movement is like white European political ideology that had the idea of an exclusive Jewish state for in Palestine, and what happened that they built their state and they expelled the Palestinian people from their villages and their towns. So like 480 Palestinian villages were demolished, and 800,000 refugees was resulted of that thing, and now there are 5 million Palestinian refugees living in a refugee camps, mainly like in Syria, Lebanon, and in the West Bank and Jordan. So the whole creation of an exclusive racist state created the problem of the refugees and created the Palestinian question.
Okay, can you explain to us what do they refer or what does the Palestinian government refer to the Gaza Strip and the West Bank as? Is it, I guess the only context that I can really think of it in the United States is kind of like the Native American reserves, and then in South Africa you had the displacement of the African people into homelands and then townships. Is that, do they refer to those two pieces of land as similar to those, like a reserve or a homeland?
Basically, it's I couldn't. There is no like specific reference for that. But the reality of it is basically, yeah, it's like almost close to the reservations that the native people are living in here, and with another like part, like another description, we could say like apartheid, like what's like apartheid system. Mm-hmm. And especially within the new wall that they are building around the Palestinian cities and around the Palestinian, you know, the Palestinian cities are like really small, so they want like to trap the Palestinian community within a small geographic area, so they could control as much as they can of the land and leave the Palestinian closed and isolated and within like small geographic area. And the basic assumption of Israel, of the Israel as a state, and the whole mentality of Zionist movement was based on as much as they can get land without people. So they want to get rid of the people and to control the land.
Okay, and you were talking about the refugees, and I guess a lot of us, and even though I've done some reading, I didn't really understand that there are refugees of the Palestinians when there actually is a land designated for them. So the West Bank and the Gaza Strip is designated land, but even within that land there are refugee camps. Can you explain about that a little bit?
Yeah, in 1948 the Zionist movement were like attacking the Palestinian village within the historical Palestine, which is like between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River. So the Palestinian refugees, what they called refugees, now living in a refugee camp in the West Bank, after they have been kicked out from their villages, which is now called Israel, as you know, the state is formed, the whole state wasn't existing, and it's manufacturing of a state based on expulsion of 800,000 Palestinians living in their native communities, and they built their state on the land of the Palestinian refugees. So the land like what's called Israel is basically the land of the refugees that now are living in a refugee camps either in the West Bank or in the diaspora around the neighboring countries.
Okay, and so are the conditions within the refugee camps different from the parts of Gaza and the West Bank that aren't considered refugee camps?
Yeah, partially, yeah. Like, we could say that. Because the refugee camps, like, basically most of the refugees came from peasants' communities, the farmers' communities, and now they have no land, their relation with the land completely distorted. So basically they become just as cheap labor within the Israeli construction and the Israeli construction work companies and factories. So within the context of like getting rid of the Palestinian employee or like worker, the situation within the refugee camps, because they have no job anymore, like the unemployment increased, the poverty increased. Also because like the whole idea of a refugee camp, it's like the refugee camps based on like a certain geographic mm-hmm. space area. Mm-hmm. So as much as like the population growing, there is no horizontal expansion of the houses, and so it's like only vertical expansion. So you could tell how much like the places are really crowded. There is a high poverty, and especially like other thing that's so important. Since 1967, when the Israeli occupied the West Bank, things become much more difficult for the refugees, because they were like the main target for the Israeli military occupation. Because as far as you know, the refugees have nothing to lose, so they were like one of the front line like in fighting against the occupation. So they were the main target for the Israeli military machine.
So you said that there's very little opportunities for the refugees to spread outside of the actual camp into the other areas that is still designated for Palestinians. Who controls them being able to move out of the refugee camp and into the rest of the land that other Palestinians live on?
Yeah, basically there is two conditions like control them. One, like the financial and like economical situation. They couldn't move because they have no money to have like a house outside, I think.
Okay.
And the second thing, the refugee question is like also a symbolic question. So if you are leaving the camp, this means that you are like almost, you know, trying to get rid from like the identity of being a refugee. And the camps is a political question. They have the right of return. So until they implement the right of return, there will be no. There should be a camp for them, like, you know, to represent their idea of that we want to return back to our hometowns.
Now, people should know that 78% of historic Palestine was ceded to the Israelis in the Oslo Accords, right? So we're already talking about a population that's lost the vast majority of its natal land.
Of its land, right.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that's really interesting and that, you know, a lot of people don't understand is that the Israeli settlements are in direct violation of international law. The United Nations Council, or actually the Security Council, has a resolution, 465, which states that it calls upon states not to provide Israel, and I quote, not to provide Israel with any assistance to be used specifically in connection with settlements in the occupied territories. And, of course, the United States has maintained a really ambivalent position in that it won't speak out against these settlements, and it continues to fund Israeli projects, no, such as funding of highways to connect the settlements. And as you're talking about this vertical expansion, you know, there have been in East Jerusalem, for example, large-scale construction of exclusively Jewish housing developments, yes? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, all of this is in direct violation of international law. And so when we talk about this refugee population, we also have to cite the simultaneous expansion, ongoing expansion of Israeli settlements in the occupied territories, which, again, is in direct violation of international law and something that is supported by our government. Now, we're sort of asking really rudimentary questions, because our listeners are students and we want them to have a really broad grasp of the historical sort of background, and then again bring it forward into your work. So I want to ask Maha, actually, you've done a lot of work around youth and women and children. What do you think are some of the difficulties that specifically face the women and children of Palestine?
Well, yes, first of all, I would like to say that occupation is the worst picture of colonialism and globalization, especially when it is protected and permitted by the global power of the United States. And not only protected, but also given the support, either financial or material support, when aggression is taking place against Palestinians every day and in front of the eyes of the international world, like killings, demolishing houses, closing checkpoints, siege, harassing children inside their own schools, women delivering at checkpoints, their own babies on checkpoints because of not permitting ambulances to cross checkpoints, like numbers of old people who died because either of heart attack or because of tired and very bad weather and bad circumstances of checkpoints and siege, lack of medicine in some area, lack of food in other area, destroyed infrastructure of the Palestinian people society after the invasion. We had most of our schools destroyed by the army. Our libraries, our classrooms, our blackboards, our even the yard where the students play, it was destroyed by the army big tanks. The streets, the electric poles, water was cut from the people. A very inhuman situation that was taking place in front of the eyes of all the international, and I know that politicians, not like the ordinary people, they know what's going on, and they I think follow up. So when they permit this going on, and they facilitate it going on, and then come to put resolutions for it, it's becoming very deeply non-appreciated by the Palestinian people, and Palestinian people, because of their long struggle and long suffer, they know very well who is leading F-16, who is the driver of F-16, but they know that the rockets are given by the United Nations. This is the feeling of our people, and more strange of that, to have now in the Middle East to have some of the Americans are existing in the Middle East by the physical existence, not only the moral existence, but also the physical existence. And Israel now is playing the other role of supporting them with information and with ways and tools to oppress more and more of the peoples in the these countries. Of course, you know, our people is poor people, and we are surviving for living. We have 60% jobless in the West Bank and maybe 80% jobless in the Gaza Strip. Most of our society is considered a youth society, because more than 60% of our society are in the age of youth and childhood. So most of the care should be given to these people, oppressed and forgotten people. There is the big issue of women, because women are always the victim of all what's going on. They are victims of the terrorism, and the point I would like to stress on to concentrate on is that the terrorism is taken. It's too bad to see that this terrorism is taken by a state. It's a terrorism of a state against people. This is very important. We are not two equally two equal powers in the. We are very simple. We have only our resistance to the occupation. Only our body resistance. We resist by simple methods.
Okay.
We resist by stones.
Can we? We want to talk about the methods a little bit. In reporting acts of Palestinians within the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the U.S. media focuses on suicide bombings and commonly refers to the suicide bombers as terrorists. Can you talk to us a little bit about the other forms of resistance taking place that you briefly touched upon?
Well, yes. Our main resistance, I don't want to talk about suiciders, because it's not my my job to describe about something like that. I'm not so much informed about something like this, but I can talk about our resistance. Our resistance as entities, as people, like confrontation with the army. We, as women, we as youth, they throw stones. And, you know, they make clashes with the soldiers. They want to kick the soldiers out of their houses. They want to forbid the soldiers from coming into their schools and expanding. As women, we do some other role. We go to siege areas, and we try to get to them some food and some medicine, because they are lack of it. We have the kind of, this is the confrontation resistance. We have other resistance, because the other resistance is the media resistance. We try to everywhere to express our oppression in front of the world, as women, and as women responsible for the society. You know, so many political prisoners that we have to get support to them. And to fulfill their needs in jail, either political men or women, political prisoners, we support them. Also, part of our resistance is to create a good circumstances for our children to learn, and to learn the difference between violence and between the violence. To try to explain what's the meaning of violence in the society, because we have a problem of having a generation of children who only see tanks, and who only see killed people, right, and who only see demolishing houses. So they tend to be more and more violent in their acts and in their relationship. Mm-hmm. So our role is to tell them to differentiate between the violence and the source of violence, mm-hmm, so that we will end up with a calm, more calm and more peaceful relationship between the kids, like in the kindergartens. We teach democratic concepts, we teach gender-based concepts, we teach human rights concepts, because we don't want to end up with a generation that is filled with hatred towards the oppression. They cannot direct their hatred.
Right, and these are forms of resistance that we don't get a chance to hear of every day in the media, and we thank you again for being here with us on Rise Up Radio, Student Voices for Peace. Before we go to a music break, I wanted to ask, Ala, you mentioned briefly the work that you do within youth activity center. It's the only youth activity center. Can you talk about the center a little bit?
Yeah. Basically, the center itself is like it's an initiative by some activists within the refugee community where I live, and we saw that how much the whole it was 53 years of being a refugee, and there is nothing going on the social level in terms of like education, except this is systematic education that or like and the academic education that given by the United Nations Relief Agency, the UNRWA. So, and in the poor communities, the education, such schools couldn't offer so much for the children to be informed and to have a space to express themselves and to express their potential. So basically, we had this initiative in giving the children much more space by giving them opportunity to inform about music, art. We had the only library in the whole Bethlehem area, which like just it's for the kids. So the only children library is existing within the refugee camp now, and we are working on the whole aim of the cultural center is to give the kids a chance to know about the world and to know about their political situation, why they are refugees, what's happened with them, and what's the solutions, and beside that it should be like the whole aim. It's like based on a progressive perspective about the conflict and about the conflicts all over the world. Mm-hmm. So basically, we are like giving the children a chance, like an alternative right. perspective about the Palestinian conflict, about the democratic concepts that's going on now in the world, and like how we could address it within the Palestinian community, and also the other thing is like to give them a space to. To express themselves and right. express their potential.
Right. Thank you. We are speaking with Maha Nazar and Ala Azay about Palestinian life under occupation and resistance to that occupation. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM, Rise Up Radio, and we'll continue speaking with our guests, and we want to open up the discussion to you and also have Kamal call Franklin, who is here with us, join the discussion. You can call 212-209-2900 after this break as we talk about, like you mentioned, some of the solutions that are being discussed within the Palestinian community.
This upcoming next track is not a break. Stuff that Maha and Allah have been talking about is a whole another universe that you listeners don't know about. The priorities in this country are like all offset, and this song is an attempt to reset the priorities and explain what beef is. Like Maha was talking about, we don't know what violence is. And of course, people who get beat up by cops do, and so do the cops. But this song is What Beef Is by Mos Def, and it's a freestyle from an obscure hip-hop show in New York City. I don't know which one it is, but that's how it goes when it's hard to find real hip-hop music these days.
It's hip-hop music. It's good enough to speak for itself, and you gotta do right by it. Minnesota, you dropped the nuclear bomb with this, son. I'm loving you for that. But come with it. Stay focused. This is for the BCK. Listen.
Beef is not what Jay said to Nas. Beef is when the working folks can't find jobs.
Yeah.
So they trying to find to get to rob. Trying to find bigger guns so they can finish the job.
Woo.
Beef is when the crack babies can't find moms. Cause they end up on box. A lot behind bars.
Mm.
Beef ain't the summer jam for Hot 97. Beef is the cocaine and AIDS epidemic.
Mm.
Beef don't come with a radio edit. Beef is when the judge is calling you defendant.
Mm.
Beef, it come with a long jail sentence. Handed down to you in a few short minutes. Beef is when your girl come through for a visit to tell you that she's pregnant by some other sex. Beef is high blood pressure and bad credit. Need a loan for your home, but you're too broke to get it.
What?
And all your little kids doing is getting bigger. You're trying not to raise them around these wives. Beef is when a gold digger got your seat in her. A man in short handout like, hey, me. Or I'm telling your wife for starting up some foul rumor that'll ruin your life. Beef is when a gangster ain't doing it right. Another gangster decided what to do with his life. Beef is not what these famous diggins do on the mic. Beef is what George Bush would do in the fight.
Yeah.
Beef is what Josh said to 50. But beef is Rose and Herb not being here with me when a soldier ends his life with his own gun. Beef is trying to figure out what to tell his son. Beef is oil prices and geopolitics. Beef is Iraq, the West Bank, and Gaza Strip. Some beef is big and some beef is small, but what y'all call beef is not beef at all. Beef is real life happening every day, and it's realer than them songs that you gave to K Slay. This has been a real big PSA from Mos Def, Pretty Flacco, Black Dante, and the Black Star Embassy. B to the K.